This is Brian Rashid Global coming to your local device. So now the next question then becomes, what, I have an idea, right? I have a business, or I have an idea or a product or a service that I want to start to sell, or I have something that I want to start up. How can I do that? And I want to jump in here to the difference between bootstrapping versus raising venture capital. I think it's a really important topic right now. And I think that a lot of people are confused about both of those industries and, or, you know, both of those ways of making it as an entrepreneur. And I want to just kind of spend probably 5 minutes talking about what that difference looks like. So, you know, bootstrapping simply means that you are not raising money from somebody else, or if you do it, you do it privately. You do it through friends, you do it through family, you know, your husband, your wife, your dad, your mom. They might help you with some funds, but the idea of bootstrapping is like you are literally, you know, lifting yourself out of your own boots to be able to create something for yourself. And so, for example, in a service-based industry, which is what I'm in client services, I didn't raise one penny from anybody. And listen, I had plenty of people that offered me money, and I said no to all of it. And there are a couple of different reasons why, and this is where I think it's important to kind of discuss the difference between bootstrapping and venture capital. Bootstrapping, you know, the advantages of being a bootstrapper, the advantages of not raising venture capital are, I see two big reasons. The first is you don't have to report to anybody. You know, it's your money, it's your time, it's your energy, and you don't have to ever justify your actions to anybody other than yourself. The other advantage is you are in complete control creatively over what happens. So it's not only that you don't have to answer to people for your decisions, but it's also that you are now in complete control of what happens in the company that you are running. Now, bootstrapping, you know, there are a couple different ways that you can do that. You can either figure out how you can almost cut all of your expenses that you don't need, right? And I think that's really important. A lot of people are, when they're bootstrapping, are stressed because they're actually spending a tremendous amount of money on things that they don't need. Cars, apartments, watches, physical possessions, for example. But also, a lot of people are confused that bootstrapping means that, you know, you either hire someone for a lot of money or you don't hire anyone at all. There are websites like Fiverr.com, Freelancer.com, and Elance.com that are all very helpful for you to hire people cheaply to help you with the things that you don't want to do. So I'm terrible at design. I don't know how to design a logo. I don't know how to design a website. I don't know how to design anything. So what a lot of people, the mistake that they make is when they're bootstrapping is they go out and hire somebody who's going to cost them $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year, and their business runs into the ground because they haven't made the sales yet that they need. And so all of a sudden, the design work that you're hiring out, paying out, you don't need because you don't have the business. And so the first thing I'd say is be smart about who you hire and where you hire from and how quickly you hire, right? So that's where my practicality comes in. The flip side of that is, what if you don't hire anybody and because of that, your business suffers? So if you need good design work and you suck at design, then you need to hire somebody, or you need to find somebody that will help you out, or you need to find somebody on Fiverr.com for cheap. So, you know, those are two really big things that I see in the bootstrapping world. Number one, you're spending too much money on pointless stuff. Number two, you need to figure out how to build a team for cheap. The other thing that you should think about when you're bootstrapping is there is a big difference between branding and sales, right? And I tell all my clients this, and this is a big point that I make in my conferences because I believe so much in it. I think that we all have, and you know, and it's branding and sales, and it's really another way of saying that is art versus money, art versus dollars, right? Because what happens with a lot of us is usually we are good at one or the other. And if you're good at both, then you're really, really in good shape. But if you're good at art and not good at making sales, or if you're a great saleswoman, but you are like me and suck at design and creating art, then you need to recognize that. And you need to realize that you need to find somebody that can do what you cannot do. And when you're bootstrapping, what that usually means is you are actually going to have a conversation with that person where you either go 50-50, right? Or you go, you have to work something out where you go in with them and work out an agreement, which is, hey, you know, Ann, I'm going to give you 50% of the company and you're going to do all the creative. You're going to do all the art. I'm going to make all the sales. Or Khadija comes to me and says, Brian, I love art. I love the creative process, but I'm terrible at sales. And so how can we work together? And so I would say, okay, Khadija, I'll take 50% of the company. You take 50% of the company and we'll do this and I'll do the sales. You do the art. So, you know, I'm using sales and art as an example, but there are so many things that are going to pop up in your business. So you need to think about, can I hire people to do this in a freelancer world? Or if I have enough sales full time, that's the first thing. Or you can say, listen, maybe I'll take on a co-founder. You know, and I'm assuming a lot of you have a co-founder where we're not gonna raise money, but we're gonna use our time and our energy and our talents, and then we're gonna split whatever money we make in the business. So that's the bootstrapping side, right? And that's gonna require a lot of scrappy work and a lot of hustling and a lot of resourcefulness, and you know, these are all things that I'm sure you guys are either great at or you can learn to be great at because you're gonna have to. You have 100% control. You don't have to answer to anyone. All of the money that you make, and this is another important thing, is yours, right? When you get investment money, that's not the case. So that's the bootstrapping side of this, and you have to, you know, utilize these resources that exist that are so super helpful for entrepreneurs like us that are just getting started that have limited amounts of money in the bank. Last thing I would say about bootstrapping is, if you make the decision to bootstrap, what you're going to want to do, and it's very closely related to what I started by saying, which is you're probably, you know, you can cut a lot of the expenditures that you have. So I literally, when I was just getting started, I made a list, right? I literally made a list of things that I was spending my money on every single day. I had a budget, and every time I spent a dollar, every time, I would literally write that down on my spreadsheet and I would start to see how I was spending my money. You should all do that too, especially if you're just getting started in bootstrapping. Make a list of a budget that you are spending your money on, right? And then the second thing you should do is look at your bank account right now. See how much money. So run that list and come up with that number. And you'll probably be surprised that you actually don't need to spend as much money as you're spending now. Once you have that number in your head, maybe it's $1,000 a month, maybe it's $5,000 a month, maybe it's $10,000 a month. I don't know what your particular situation is, family life, living, etc. But let's just say it's $3,000 a month. You need to look at your bank account and you need to know in your head that if you have $60,000 in the bank, right, then you know that you have 20 months. No, yeah, 20 months where you are good not making money. 20 months of runway, it's called. Because let me tell you something. If you have that in your head and you know, okay, I'm going to bootstrap this because I have enough money for a year where we can build this company, we can build this business, and even if we don't make one single dollar, we know that we have the business, right? We have enough business to keep things going, or we have enough money in the bank to keep things going, even if we don't have business, then that's a smart thing for you to do. Because also, if you look at your bank account and you have 1 month worth of savings, I'm going to tell you right now, it's not the right time to start a business. You need to have more than 1 month of savings because these things take time. So as you're thinking through, should I bootstrap? Should I raise money? That is another thing that I think that everyone should think about. All right. Now, when we move into this idea of venture capital, let me kind of walk you through why some things you should know about venture capital. And, you know, this is coming from someone that's friendly with a lot of venture capitalists. I have a fair number of friends that are venture capitalists. I understand the VC world. I spend a lot of time doing business in Silicon Valley of California. And I'm learning more and more about the international world of venture capital. But this is important. You have to understand that there are a couple different things that you should remember about venture capitalists. The first is they are basically making a bet on you. And that bet is they look at you as a number. Not all of them, but a grand majority of them look at you as a number, which is if I invest in 100, and this is just straight math, if I invest in 100 companies, I know that 95 of them, and sometimes more, sometimes 98, are going to fail. I just know that. I know that to be true. I've seen the math. I've seen the statistics. I know that to be true. So they are putting money into 100 different people, hoping that one of those people breaks through. That's fine as long as you know that that's what's happening, which means when you are picking a venture capitalist or when you are pitching a venture capitalist, so many people make this mistake that they think that because they are picking, because the venture capitalist has the money, then the entrepreneur or the startup founder has to be at the mercy of whatever the venture capitalist wants, and it's a bad strategy. So you need to ask these venture capitalists that you're talking to, what has your track record been in the investment world? Who else have you invested in? How much time are you going to give us every week? Who can you connect us to? Right? Those are four really important questions that you can ask the venture capitalists when you're meeting with them. What is your track record? Who else have you invested in? How much time can you give us? And who can you connect us to that will be helpful in the distribution of our product, in the creation of our product, and in the increased sales of whatever it is that we're doing? Really, really important. Okay? And so, you know, don't be at the mercy of the VC just because they're the ones giving you the money. And a lot of people make this mistake. They feel powerless. You're not powerless. You have ideas. You have a business. You're the one that's going to be doing 90% of the work. And so that's what I would say about the venture capital world. The other thing you have to understand is if you're, you know, the risk that you run into by raising venture capital money, and I'm not anti-venture capital money. I think that there's value for some companies. It's really important to raise money. You just literally can't do it all on your own. But what's happening now, especially in the U.S., and I'm excited to learn more about if this is true in Africa, but especially in the U.S., what's happening is people are building startups to appease the investors instead of building startups that are actually making money, that are actually generating revenues. People, you know, I compare startups to like the politician that has a 4-year term and he spends the first 2 years or the first 3 years doing everything right so that the people will reelect him or her and then for the next 4 years, even though what they promised they were going to be doing is not at all what they're doing. And so what that analogy plays out with startups, because there are so many startups that have legitimately good business plans and have viable growth strategies that can actually make them money, but they're not doing it because they want to appease the investor to hit a certain number of whatever it is that the investor wants to see, People are building businesses to raise more capital instead of building businesses to actually sell things. So that's a big risk.
Sorry, Brian. Let me interrupt you.
Sure.
Because this is a very important point, actually. Yes. And I'm very happy that you've said this, because this is something I'm really, really hoping that we'll spend a lot of time in the next few weeks discussing. I'm also glad that you asked this the question. That one of the important things that I've noticed myself within the African continent is that they're beginning to do this. Mm-hmm. A lot of the entrepreneurs whom have applied to this program, which was over 500 people, have asked me how they can get investors. Mm-hmm. This was the most frequent question that I received. Mm-hmm. And that was actually the way that I used to narrow down whom was going to attend the training and whom was not. Because I need to know that as an entrepreneur, you have a strategy for your own customers. Because you need to have your own plan, which will appeal to investors in the end. But you cannot center your whole business around getting money from somebody other than your customer.
Correct.
Because then you already have the wrong direction. Because if you are trying to get money from an investor, you will. But the question is, can you then sell to the person that you originally set out to sell to? So your strategy, if it's right, should appeal to your customer. So it is really important for me on this training, actually, that you learn this part of this. Because having a business that appeals to an investor is not a real business, actually. Having a business that appeals to a customer means that you have found something that is wrong, a gap in the market, and you are trying to fill that gap. So you have to make sure that everything you do is centered around filling that gap. And if you need a heavy technology that requires investors, you will then start to think about how can I get an investor for that. But oftentimes, most businesses in Africa especially does not have a heavy technology requirement, which means that if you can sell 1 naira to 1 million Nigerians, you're actually a millionaire. So please continue.
That's helpful. That's helpful information, especially on, you know, about the continent, and I appreciate it. You know, so I think that, like, what I'm saying is even more relevant than if after that comment, which is, you know, everybody wants an investor, right? And I think that the question you have to ask is why? Why do you want an investor? Is it because you actually don't know if your business is going to work and you want to spend someone else's money? Is it because you actually need it for the technology or to scale in a way that you think is going to be the most beneficial for the company? What is it, right? And so that for me is something that I'm excited to learn more about from you guys. But as you're thinking through, do I raise money? Do I not raise money? I think the most important thing to remember is exactly what Khadija just said, which is build the business for the customer, build the business for the client, build the business to solve a need. And it'll be easier for you to raise money. So for the people that are wondering, like, what are investors looking for? I can give you that answer quickly, and then I think that it's going to be a perfect transition into how have you confirmed that there is a need for your product or your service or your idea in your market, and that's focusing on how do we make sure that the thing that you're building is actually important to your potential customers? So investors are basically looking for two things. They're looking for an idea that is relevant, and they're looking to see if they like you as a person, right? And I think that how do you show that an idea is relevant? The more data that you can show, the more numbers that you can show, the more traction that you can show, the better. It is simply not enough anymore to say that there is a $10.5 billion market for your clothes because there are 8 billion people in Africa. You know, like, that is just an absurd comment, and it's something that I hear all the time. I just did an entire competition for Latin America, where I'm actually bringing two entrepreneurs from Latin America to Silicon Valley of California. So we've been running this global entrepreneurship competition. And one of the questions I asked was, what kind of impact will this business or this idea have in your community? And so many people wrote, it'll impact the entire community because these are people that have cell phones. And I mean, it's just not a smart thing. What's way smarter is, because here's how it's going to impact the community. It'll impact the community because I know for sure that 150,000 people have already downloaded my app, or have already used my product, or have already tested my software. However, you know, here's the feedback that I have from the customers. That is the data. That is how you can show that your project or your whatever is relevant. And so, you know, and then the, in terms of, do they like you? You know, when I say that at conferences, people kind of laugh, partly because I think that they know it's true, and partly because I think it surprises people. But do they like you is such an important thing. And, you know, just from my experience with venture capitalists that I've talked to explore these kinds of themes, they say, you know, things like, you know, is this person coachable? Is this person open to feedback? Is this person excited and passionate? Will this person work hard? Has this person done it before? And that's probably the biggest one for a lot of these guys and gals that are giving money. You know, if you have any sort of track record of success in the past, whether that means you've sold a company, whether that means you've had a company, or that means you've worked for another company, any sort of transferable success story that you've had is worth mentioning to the investor at that point. And so, you know, the problem with venture capital that I see, and maybe you can pick this up from my tone. The big problem with venture capital right now is I think that if you can do it yourself without raising money, then you should. That's just where I'm at right now. If you can find a way to make this thing work without raising money from a venture capitalist, then you should do it because you have 100% ownership. When you have a venture capitalist, I'm going to say this very, very, very slowly and very directly. When you have a venture capitalist, you have a boss. You are no longer in control. You are no longer the owner of your idea, of your business. You're playing with someone else's money. For some people, that's fine. For other people like me, I couldn't handle it. I could not handle having to report. The reason I left my job is because I didn't want to report to anybody else. I didn't want to have to explain myself to anybody else. I wanted to do my thing. So you need to think about that. And you know, you also need to think about the fact that you are a number to them, and pick your VC wisely because you are in a long-term relationship. But I hope that that can shed some light on the current ecosystem of VC world and what they're looking for, what you should be looking for, and some red flags that you should be thinking about before taking somebody else's money. And I think that's a helpful overview between what is the difference between bootstrapping and venture capital, and how does that look, and what does that mean for your business? Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please check me out on all of the social worlds, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and YouTube at Brian Rash Global. See you there.